Well, hi there, my friends, and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to episode 517 of Sustainable Minimalists. This is a subscriber-supported show about intentional and eco-friendly minimalist living. And on today's show, we are looking to Zen Buddhism for insight on how to let stuff go. Stuff, yes, like accumulations, possessions, but today we're going deeper than that. Today we are also letting go of slights, grudges, fears, dead relationships, and anxieties about the future. Oh, yes, we are. Now, let's back up for a minute. I recently came across the work of Dr. Stephanie Preston. She is a psychologist at the University of Michigan. She has spent her career studying how animals and humans relate to their possessions. Preston believes that overaccumulation and minimalism are driven by the same thing. So they're two ends of a spectrum. Both minimalism and overaccumulation stem from a need for control. Overaccumulators have anxiety that they are going to make a mistake and need something, so they collect and collect and keep and keep. Minimalists, on the other hand, have anxiety around disorder and having too much stuff that they can't escape. And so getting rid of stuff then becomes a way to exert control over their physical environment. So holy heck, what now? The science says that minimalism is an extreme response to feelings of lack of control. And yet on the other side of the stuff spectrum, keeping stuff, holding on to stuff, is also a means by which humans attempt to exert control over their environment. Get out of town, Dr. Preston. Well, exerting control feels good, at least on the surface. And the converse, letting stuff go, tends to have a negative connotation, right? We don't like to lose things as human beings. But you already know that letting stuff go is freeing, whether it's physical stuff or whether it's mental and emotional baggage. Removing weights that have been holding us down is beneficial for us in the long run. So on today's show, one more time, yes, we're talking about stuff, but we're going deeper. We're talking about letting go of future anxiety. We're letting go of past relationships that have died. We're letting go of FOMO. We're letting go of second guessing. And if we have time, I'll add in a couple more things that we can let go of. And of course, we're doing all of this through the lens of Zen Buddhism. Now, this is a free episode today. I've been releasing a lot of subscriber-only episodes, but this one's free for the simple reason that I miss you all. I miss those of you who are not subscribers to the show. I will continue to put out subscriber-only episodes moving forward. And so if you like this episode and you're able to support it, you want to stay in touch and you want to get access to those past subscriber-only episodes and future ones, you can do so via the link to subscribe in this week's show notes for $5 a month. I think it's like $42 a year now on Substack, and I would really appreciate that support if you're able. So if I was doing things the normal way, the way I normally do things, we would start easy today. We would talk about letting go of physical stuff first. But due to where we're at here in the United States in terms of current events, I'm going to do things a little bit differently today. Instead of starting easy and building up to the bigger and frankly more difficult things to let go of, the more abstract things, I'm going to flip it and reverse it. Today we're going to talk about letting go of anxieties of the future first. And the reason is because as I record this, here in the United States, we are in quite a political tailspin. The news is, or should be, quite concerning. The bottom line is, if you're paying attention, you are very likely scared and anxious at the moment. And if you're not scared and anxious, then you aren't paying attention. Full stop. That's the simple truth of it. There's no way to sugarcoat it. And I am out of patience, so I'm frankly not even going to try to sugarcoat it. If you're not scared and anxious right now as an American citizen, you are not paying attention. So I need some Zen Buddhism. Clearly, I need some insight and perspective on how to reframe this anxiety about our uncertain future. Zen Buddhism tells us that if we cannot be certain about the future, we need to stop worrying about the future. You and I, we can never really know what's actually going to happen, can we? Things that we're dreading may likely not occur. And things that are definitely not likely to happen may actually occur. So no matter how much data we collect, no matter how many newspapers we read, no matter how many news sources we cite or look to, no matter how much time we spend planning and prepping and preparing, the future will always remain uncertain because that is the nature of the future. So Buddhist monks suggest, right, that instead of spending insane amounts of time, effort, and energy worrying about this uncertain future, we are much better off devoting our energy to what is right here in front of us in this present moment. There's a Tibetan saying, and I quote, if a problem can be solved, there's no use worrying about it. Just solve it, right? But if the problem can't be solved, worrying is going to do no good. Worrying will not solve anything. Bring to mind right now all the times you have worried in the past, and then try to investigate if your worry helped solve the problem in any way. Really think about it. Did worrying solve the problem? No, worrying solves nothing. Worrying really is just a waste of energy at the end of the day. And so related to this little tidbit, if you can't be certain about it, stop worrying about it, is another piece of wisdom from Buddhism, which of course is to not leave your eyes and ears open all the time. I have learned something about myself recently. I am most alert and I am most able to give my task the best, my best effort in the early morning. I'm in the habit of getting up early every day, but on the weekends, especially Saturday, Sunday mornings, I know the blasphemy, right? I get up while my family is still sleeping. I work on the podcast. I digest the news. I read for pleasure. I do whatever I deem important in those early morning hours when my house is quiet and my brain is working optimally. And so bringing this back to anxieties about the future, we live in the information age, do we not? While it might seem like a good idea to collect information from a wide range of sources, doing that really only is beneficial to a certain point. And then once we cross that threshold into it no longer being beneficial, we're actually harming our wellness, our well-being. All too often, let's take this a step further. All too often, the information that we're digesting when we're in our worry spiral has dubious accuracy, or it's of little importance, or it heightens our anxiety for no good reason other than to distract us from the actually concerning things. I saw something on Substack recently. Somebody posted, you know, if there's a bear in the room, I'm not going to take my eyes off the bear. And I hear that. Don't look away from threats just because the threat's scary. The solution to our major problems is not to look away, but perhaps for our own sanity. Because remember, we have to keep our strength up so that we can play the long game here. We need to selectively close our eyes and ears sometime. For me, that means ingesting my daily news in the morning and then stopping and then intentionally looking away for the rest of the day. After the morning, I'm done. I'm not putting on the news at 5 p.m. because at 5 p.m. I'm exhausted. I'm mentally fatigued. I'm not going to be able at 5 p.m. to digest and reflect on what I'm hearing and watching. So it's best to close my eyes in the night because I know something about myself, right? I'll open them again tomorrow. The father of American psychology, William James, he said that our life is a combination of what we pay attention to. We do not need to pay attention to every last bit of information to stay informed. So protect your peace and, frankly, your strength by not leaving your eyes and ears open all the time. So let's recap. We're talking about letting go of anxieties about the future. Zen Buddhism has two tidbits of wisdom for us. The first, of course, is to remember that if you can't be certain about it, stop worrying about it, or try at least. I'm trying. I'm not there yet, but I'm trying. And the second piece of wisdom, of course, is to not leave your eyes and ears open all the time. I hope that helps some of you out there. Now we're going to back up and we're going to go to stuff. And what we're letting go of here is our innate human need to accumulate. So we're letting go of our need to accumulate, and we're doing so through our first piece of wisdom from Buddhism. That, of course, is when the cup is already full, there's no need to add more. Think about a cup. It's full of water. Do we need to add more water to that cup? Anthropologists at the University of Texas believe that there are three reasons why humans accumulate possessions. The first reason is, evolutionarily speaking, it has always been better for human survival to have too much stuff rather than too little. So there's a biological component there. The second reason is material goods can bring us status. Interesting, right? We accumulate stuff to move up in the pack. And then the third reason is we can use material goods to feel like we belong. Another way to say that is to fit in with others. Now, there's a great human tragedy at play here, which is, of course, that the more we consume, the hungrier we get. Our concept of needs has also changed over time, right? We nowadays invent something that we don't exactly need, but over time, the thing begins to dominate our culture so much that we start to consider it a necessity. I'm talking GPS or Bluetooth or wireless headphones or even remote controls. Like, we don't really need this stuff, but they become so ubiquitous in our culture that we begin to view them as needs when they're not needs. They're nice to have, not need to have. Fun fact here, the number of items that Americans consider necessities rather than luxuries multiplies each decade. Scientists recently found that because we have ample access to all kinds of resources, we tend to default these days to solving problems by buying. And yet when we have scarce resources, humans perform better. We have more solutions. Our solutions are also more efficient and more creative. But when our cup is full, when it's overflowing, when stuff is abundant, we tend to fix any problem by buying more stuff. So we're letting go of our need to accumulate by first remembering that when our cup is already full, there's no need to add more. The second way we're letting go of our need to accumulate today is through a second piece of wisdom from Zen Buddhism, which is, of course, to remember that all things come from nothingness. When my grandmother was alive, she understood this in a bone-deep manner. I would go over and visit her, and I would always leave with something, a vase, a figurine, a plate, you name it. She would never let me leave without first giving me a possession of hers. And at the time, I thought she was just trying to declutter, and it was kind of annoying. But now I wonder whether there was a deeper understanding about the realities of life going on at play. I wonder whether she understood that the accumulation of stuff and money for accumulation's sake is a waste of energy. Perhaps she understood, right, that if you're going to accumulate money, or in her case, if you're going to accumulate crystal vases, it's prudent to accumulate for other people, for others to use later, not for yourself. Because we can't take it with us. Let's go back to the wisdom. All things come from nothingness. We cannot bring our bank accounts with us wherever we're going. We cannot bring our crystal vases with us wherever we're going. So accumulating for accumulation's sake is really a hollow goal. Accumulating for ourselves might increase our quality of life in the short term, but long term, it's a waste of energy. Because remember, the person who has the most stuff when they die doesn't win anything. There's no winning here. Life is not a game of winning or losing. If we frame it that way, at the end, we all lose. So all things come from nothingness. I will say here too, let's add in another one when it comes to stuff, because this is a show about minimalism as it relates to possessions. A third piece of wisdom we can rely on from Zen Buddhism is to think of letting things go not as throwing them away, but as setting them free. Buddhist monks argue that the more you amass in your home, the more heavily they weigh on your spirit. Some monks even go so far to say that clutter is like saturated fats clogging your arteries. Wow, what a visual. Let's take clothing for an example, because we all have clothing. The average American purchases 37 items of clothing each year. And one study found that we now own about, give or take, 110 items of clothing. But 12% of our clothes we've never worn for various reasons. 57% of our closets are either too tight or too loose. They don't fit. And 21% of those clothes are not wearable because they're stained or ripped or holed, or for whatever reason, they're not the right items for our lifestyle. So add that up, 12% plus 57% plus 21%. That leaves us with just about 10% of our closets that we wear. 10% of 110, 11 items. The vast majority of us are only wearing 11 items in our closets regularly. By the way, 11 items, that's exactly what Thomas Jefferson's wife, Martha, owned in her closet, 11 items total. So we have 110 items, but we're only wearing 11. Interesting. So if you have a closet that's like most Americans, you have about 100 pieces of clothing that are weighing on your spirit. They're just hanging out in your closet and drawers. Getting rid of the ones that make you feel bad about yourself, that make you feel the wrong size or the wrong shape, or make you feel frumpy, or make you feel nostalgic for your past life, the good old days perhaps. Getting rid of those items will absolutely lighten your spirit and your emotional load. And so think of getting rid of stuff not as getting rid of it or wasting it, but as setting the items free. You're not just setting the items free, you're setting yourself free. And when you think of it this way, setting these items free, setting yourself free, hopefully you can let go of some of the guilt. So let's recap. We just let go of our need to accumulate, and we did so with three pieces of wisdom from Zen Buddhism. The first was, when the cup is already full, there's no need to add more. Second, all things come from nothingness. Another way to say that is you can't take it with you. Right? Think about my grandma. And then finally, our third piece of wisdom when it comes to letting go of our need to accumulate stuff is to think of letting things go, not as throwing them away, but as setting them free. We're going to move on to letting go of past dead relationships next. And the piece of wisdom straight from Zen Buddhism that I want to highlight in this section, just one, is do not pursue those who leave. Do not pursue those who leave. So let's think about some people who leave. Maybe somebody moves away, or one of your coworkers gets a new job, or your partner breaks up with you. However it may happen, a loss of someone is usually, if not always, painful. We human beings do not like to lose anything, and we certainly don't like to lose people, because people are the source of our greatest treasure, which is relationships. But there is a Zen saying that says, quote, do not pursue those who leave. And that saying gets at the point that it's best to just say goodbye rather than prolong the pain of separation. Human connection cannot be chased or forced. It happens often through a natural twist of fate. So don't expend energy holding on to bonds that once held you to someone else if it's time for the bond to break. Now, I have a hairdresser. She is a practicing Buddhist. And whenever I go in, we tend to have pretty deep conversations. One time I went in for my normal cut, and I was talking to her about the loss of a relationship that I held dear to me, and how I was having trouble with it, frankly. And she said to me that, you know, if it's time to let the person go, it's time to let them go. So just do it. Just let them go. If we have used up our karma, with this person and our glass is now empty, I need to say goodbye and I need to walk away. No need to chase, right? Do not pursue those who leave. But then, of course, me being the control freak that I am, I asked how. How on earth am I supposed to just say goodbye and let them go? Letting go is really hard for me, whether it's people, stuff, anxiety, whatever it is. Letting go is not easy for a lot of people. And my hairdresser said that letting go is about trusting in the universe, trusting in its plans, trusting in fate. Either this friend is in my future or not. They might be back, but they might not be back. And either way, there's no need for me to torture myself for something that's not meant for me. It's also possible, right, that the universe's plans was to get me to this moment right here, and that's it. The relationship got me to this moment, and now our karma is complete. Thank you for the blessings. Now I move on alone without this person in my life. And my response to that was something along the lines of, well, what if I'm not sure that the universe is correct? Yeah, I actually said that. And my hairdresser said, her eyes lit up when I said that. She said, the only reason I'm asking that question, well, what if the universe isn't right? The only reason I would ever ask that is because I have not yet fully surrendered. Because once you believe that there's a divine order, a bigger plan, then surrender is easy. It's effortless. It comes naturally. Because if you believe with all your being that there's a higher order, that there's a bigger plan, then you naturally surrender to it. You don't fight against it anymore. And if you surrender, then you can let go. I know, it's deep stuff. But if you are struggling with the loss of a relationship, maybe it's a family member, maybe it's a partner, maybe it's a friend, whoever is providing the source of the loss of relationship, remember, do not pursue those who leave. But conversely, there's a second part to this saying, which is, do not turn away from those who come back to you. So I hope that helps. Now we're going to move on. I have a couple quick ones. Let's move on to letting go of our fear of missing out. Let go of your fear of missing out by savoring your alone time. So maybe, you know, if you're on social media, you see everybody from your past living their best lives all the time, don't you? Your friend from college, you kind of lost touch with, but you still follow on social media. She just went on an epic trip to Tahiti. Or your friend group went on a girls' weekend to a ski mountain and you had to miss out and you're really feeling bad about it. In our social media age, it can be really darn easy to come down with a serious case of FOMO, fear of missing out. People post online when life is great. They don't post when life is rough. So if we aren't a bit introspective, it can certainly feel as though everyone we follow is living amazing, epic lives while we are living humdrum, boring ones. Right? But we have to remember, everybody's just posting when life is great. It's not us. It's not that our lives are more boring than others. It's that everybody else is posting when life is great. So let's remember that first as we seek to let go of our fear of missing out. And let's also remember that savoring our alone time has big benefits. In ancient times, the Japanese regarded a quiet life alone, surrounded by nature, as the height of luxury. The height of luxury. Why? Well, quiet time gives us the space we need for introspection and awareness. Letting big things go, like slights and grudges and hurts, letting all of that go demands introspection. And introspection only comes through quiet, through solitude. How many of us can introspect on a girls' trip? Not me. We are in a loneliness epidemic. Yes, I'm the first to admit it. I am lonely an awful lot. And yet we are always connected thanks to our smartphones. Perhaps smartphones are making us averse to loneliness. We have become so accustomed to frequent, albeit shallow, contact with others. And so perhaps this is why, at least partly why, so many of us have trouble spending time on our own, embracing solitude, leaning into quiet, and having free time with nothing to do. We're always on, but we're always on in such a shallow way. And we feel the need to be distracted at all moments through media, through games, through scrolling, you name it. But let's remember, there are big benefits to being in solitude, to embracing quiet, to letting go of FOMO. We do not always need to be at the epicenter of fun, of all the things happening. We can let go of our fear of missing out by embracing alone time, embracing solitude, embracing the quiet. We're moving on, and we're going to attempt to let go of grudges. And we're going to do so by becoming skilled at forgetting. Now, I have a little story, a little Stephanie story for you. It's been a while since a Stephanie story, but I went skiing this weekend with my family. Pro tip, do not go skiing in New England during the month of February, on the weekends at least. The mountains are super crowded. The trails are overrun with people. The waits for ski lifts are super long. And because there are so many people on the trail, you really can't get all that great runs in because you're weaving in and out of people. Okay, so went skiing with my family. I was on a green trail. For those of you who are not skiers, the green trails are the easiest trails, or the family-friendly trails. Well, wouldn't you know, a kid was bombing down this green trail, got out of control, and ran into my 7-year-old daughter and made her fall down. I reminded the child that this was a green trail and they needed to slow down, which perhaps might not have been my best moment. But in my mama bear moment of my daughter crying on the ground because somebody just ran into her, I felt the need to remind the boy of the fact that he was skiing too fast. And then he apologized. He was super nice and he went on his way. But then about 5 seconds later, the boy's mother skied by. And as she skied by, she yelled at my daughter, so like a tit-for-tat yelling, saying she wasn't skiing fast enough. And when I tell you I saw red, I think that would be an understatement. I was furious. How dare somebody tell me that my daughter at a family ski mountain on a green trail was skiing too slow? And how dare you imply that my daughter, my 7-year-old, deserves to get rammed into by another skier? Okay. So that's my grudge. Okay, I'm holding on to this grudge. This grudge actually kind of, I hate to say it, but ruined my day skiing. I was so mad. I wanted to find this woman. I wanted to give her a piece of my mind. Oh, I was furious. All right. Well, holding a grudge requires a vast amount of energy to keep it going, doesn't it? It requires us to play over and over again the event in our mind. A grudge makes us keep that fire burning inside. To hold a grudge means to really just carry along anger at the end of the day. And when we're holding on to anger, we're restricting the space inside in which we can hold on to love and happiness, friendship, all the good things in life. When we're so busy focused on the grudge, we can't hold on to the good things. So I did not find this woman again, and I did not give her a piece of my mind. But if I'm looking to Zen Buddhism to help me let go of this grudge, Zen Buddhism would suggest that I practice loving kindness. Another way to say that is unconditional love. To remember that just as when I reminded this boy that he was skiing too fast out of my mama bear tendencies, this woman who skied by and passively aggressively yelled at my daughter, she was also doing the same thing, right? She was essentially at the end of the day protecting, standing up for her son. I'm not so great at letting go of grudges. I'll be frank about that. But for me, when I am successful, letting go of grudges starts with putting myself in the other person's shoes. It's about seeing the same situation. So in this case, it's seeing the mother's point of view. Like, was I a Karen reminding this boy of the rules? Yes, I probably was. And I do think at the end of the day, that everybody's doing the best they can. Like, we have to be able, even in our moments of seeing red, being ragey, we need to be able to see the humanity in other people. And so this happened, this event on the ski trail happened yesterday. I was not able yesterday to see clearly, let's say. But I have a little space now today that I'm able to maybe not practice unconditional love for this woman, but I'm able to put myself in her shoes and to remind myself that, yeah, she's doing the best she can, just like I am, right? Just like I am. So letting go of grudges, what does Zen Buddhism say? Zen Buddhism says that letting go of grudges starts by practicing loving kindness, but also becoming skilled at forgetting. We humans have this amazing ability to forget bad things that happen. So things bigger than, you know, a run-in with another mother on a ski lift. I'm talking big things, when people hurt you really bad. This ability that we have to forget bad things is a survival mechanism of sorts, right? Like, once time passes, it is human nature to forget the unpleasantness of almost any experience. So if something happens to you that you'd like to forget, Buddhists would suggest that you first feel all the feelings. So don't shove the feelings down. Don't pretend it didn't happen. Give yourself the time you need to feel all the feelings, even the uncomfortable ones. Do not hide the feelings under the carpet like I tend to do. Feel your feelings. Get them out. And then once your feelings of anger, resentment, sadness, whatever the feeling is, once those feelings have passed through, you say to yourself, that's enough. And then you allow yourself to lean into that amazing human ability to forget. All right, so we're letting go of grudges. How do we do it? Number one, we remind ourselves, we consciously remind ourselves of the humanity of other people by, hopefully, if you're able to do it, practice unconditional love for all humans, all beings, all things. And number two, by leaning into our amazing human ability to forget. Let's do one more, because why the heck not? I don't often put out free episodes, so let's just do it. It's really quick. We're finally today going to let go of second guessing, and we're going to let go of our need for second guessing real quick by reminding ourselves that all of our choices are the right ones. Let's remind ourselves that for choices big and small, there's no right answer. There's no clear wrong answer either. We like in this society to have things black and white, right or wrong, right? And then we worry once we make a choice that we made the wrong one and then we backtrack. No. Let's stop doing that. There's no point in worrying. We already established that at the top of this episode. There's also no point in worrying about what is the quote unquote right choice. You're going to get to where you need to be regardless of the option you choose. We're getting back to that idea that there's a higher order. Fate, perhaps, the universe in charge, perhaps, whatever we call it. All that matters is that you go boldly forward with the choice you've made, provided, of course, that you're not hurting anybody. You make a choice. As long as you're not hurting anybody, don't bother second guessing yourself. Don't bother worrying about whether you made the right choice. Rid yourself of that mental garbage. It's not serving you. Once you let go of that indecisiveness, you will feel more at ease. So go boldly in the direction you've decided. Have faith in yourself that you made the choice that's best for you in that moment. And have faith that you're going to get to wherever you need to be, regardless of the daily choices you make on this planet. All right, I could keep going, but we're going to wrap up today. So just to recap really quick, we hopefully today we let go of some anxieties about the future. Then we let go of our need to accumulate. Then we let go of past relationships, followed by letting go of our fear of missing out, followed by letting go of grudges, maybe hopefully. And finally, we closed out our show by letting go of second guessing our choices. That's our show today. Again, one more quick plug. If you got something out of this show, if something about, you know, my word salad today is going to stick with you moving forward, I hope you'll consider supporting this show And thank you for considering. There's really nothing much else for me to say. Either you will or you won't. And if you do, thank you. Maybe if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can opt into that 3-day free trial. Maybe you can, in those 3 days, go back and listen to all the subscriber-only episodes that I've put out over the past 3 weeks. If you like them, maybe you'll even stick around and become a paid supporter, $5 a month or $42 a year, I believe it is. And I thank you so much for considering this work. I just can't put out free episodes anymore financially. So I appreciate you considering. And if you do decide to become a paid supporter, please send me an email. Let me know. I'll send you our book club information, get you on the mailing list so that you know moving forward when subscriber-only episodes come out. As always, reach out if you need me, and take care.